I'm going to talk about a paper in collaboration with my supervisor, Jim Lidsey, Steve Thomas, who's also at Queen Mary, and John Ward, who's in University of Victoria. And Steve and John are the string theorists, and we're the cosmologists, so don't ask me any hard string theory questions. This work arises from something we've heard a lot about this week, which was the fact that in DBI models, there is a limit due to the lithe bound on how far the field can move, how far the brain can move. And we just saw a very good picture of how DBI inflation works. We have some anti-D3 brains at the bottom of a throat coming off the Calabi-Yau bulk somewhere up here. And there's a probe D3 brain that's moving down the throat. And the distance from that D3 brain to the bottom of the throat is taken as the inflaton phi. Now, in this paper published last year, we considered work that had been done by Daniel Bauman and Liam McAllister in using the lithe bound to limit the tensor scalar ratio you could get from a DBI scenario. Basically, they considered the brain moving the whole length of the throat, so their conservative limit was it can move as far as it wants, the whole length of the throat, and on that you can put a limit on the tensor scalar ratio for certain potentials. But, we followed that up by saying that really what we observe in the CMB isn't the production of gravitational waves or tensor scalar mode from the whole throat. It's only from the part of the throat that is observable. So the few E-folds that we get in the CMB tensor spectrum. So if you instead consider that, this trivial inequality here will tell you that this bit is smaller than this bit. And you get tighter constraints on the tensor scalar ratio. So in fact, you can get this upper bound on OR of 10 to the minus 7. But at the same time, if you look at the observable quantities that you have, and if you get a blue, or sorry, if you get a red spectrum, you can also put a lower bound on the tensor scalar ratio of about 0.002. Now that's WMAP 3, but it doesn't really change much for WMAP 5. Clearly, these are inconsistent, and it's a problem for vanilla DBI models. So we want to get out of this somehow. We want to maybe change these bounds to give us an allowed region. So we'll look at some ways of doing that. So here is the sort of standard theory involved. You've got an action with a non-canonical kinetic term P of x and phi, where x is just half phi dot squared in these cases normally. You also have very special parameter F and L, which, as we've heard again this week a lot, measures your non-Gaussianity of the system coming from the three-point function. And that F and L, in this case, is based purely on the sound speed, CS squared, and this lambda term here. And those are both given purely in terms of x, which again is phi dot squared, so your sort of kinetic term, and also derivatives of this non-canonical piece of the action P. So if you see here, CS squared is just P comma X, P comma XX, and lambda has a P comma triple X there. So everything is really done in terms of P. And that'll be important to know that X and, or sorry, lambda and CS squared are just functions of these Ps. So what do we want to do? We want to change this bound on the tensor scalar ratio. And one way to do it is if you look at the full equation, you see that this bound in OR depends on a combination CS, P, comma, X, which in the DBI case is just unity. But if we could somehow change this so that CS, P, comma, X was very large, we could loosen this bound on the tensor scalar ratio and maybe get some of these models back into play somehow. One other nice thing about the DBI case is the dependence of this lambda factor that popped up in the FNL description. Lambda is equal to a half times 1 over CS squared minus 1. So one thing we wanted to keep was that we wanted lambda to be proportional, 1 over alpha times this 1 over CS squared. So this is nice because when you put that back into FNL, every FNL is proportional to 1 over CS squared. So that's where you get, in DBI, you get FNL is about 0.3 of CS, 1 over CS squared. So we wanted to keep that function. So we wanted FNL to still be proportional to 1 over CS squared, because that when you take the slow, small sound speed, That gives you large non-Gaussianity, and that's a defining feature of most of these DBI-like models. So that lambda parameter and the CS squared were just derivatives of P, and you can, from this equation, you can write down a third-order ODE in terms of P comma X, P comma XX, P comma XXX. You can solve it taking the relativistic limits, so you get rid of one term easily. You can also solve it analytically in the full sense, but you get a very hypergeometric function, which boils down to this in the relativistic limit. So this looks very like the standard DBI action. You just have some f of phi here outside, a 1 minus phi dot squared term here, and then something along the end, and a potential will be added as well. But there's this additional thing where DBI has a square root here. Now we have this 1 minus phi dot squared to the power of m, where m is just a function of this proportionality constant that we had. So you tell me an action in this form with some m, and I can tell you lambda is proportional to something times 1 over cs squared. So this is nice, because it kind of looks like sort of a generalization of the DBI action. It's kind of maybe what you might think of doing next anyway. But it's also going to have this nice property that the bound is going to be loosened. Just by definition, this is how we got that equation. Okay, so here you can see how the bound is loosened. This capital F of phi is just all the other terms being put together, because you should concentrate on this minus F and L term here. And now the tensor scalar ratio is less than something times F and L, an observable parameter, the non-Gaussianity, to the power of a half minus M, which where M is that index that we had a minute ago. So standard DBI is just M is a half, like I've said. And clearly you can see in this case, standard DBI gives you zero up here, so there's no dependence on F and L in this inequality. So the standard DBI case that was giving us the trouble is R is less than this capital F. And I suppose if we have time, we can go and look at, in full gory detail, what that looks like. I won't explain all the different terms in this, but just for an idea, it's not as simple maybe as F of phi. There's different things coming in here, the volume of the convectification and number of e-foldings that you observe. Okay, so standard DBI is m is equal to a half. To loosen the bound, we want this side to be larger. So to do that, we just need m to be smaller than a half, and then we'll easily get this new dependence on F and L. In these models, F and L is going to be large, so this side is going to get bigger. Okay, so in WMAP convention, F and L is going to be large and negative. So minus F and L is going to be large. This side is going to be bigger, and the bound is going to be slightly loosened. And hopefully, the loosening of the bound will allow these models where before they wouldn't have been allowed. So we want M less than a half. How are we going to get it? Well, I probably wouldn't be doing this talk if we hadn't found some way of doing it. So here we go. This is what John and Steve Thomas worked on. This is a coincident brain scenario. So in the throat, instead of one brain moving up and down, you have little n number of coincident brains moving up and down the throat. The idea really is that in brain-brain annihilation, there's no real reason why you should only get one brain, like the energy produced should only produce one brain, you might get two or three. So originally the idea was that the brain would come down, annihilate at the bottom of the throat, and then maybe two brains would be produced and they'd go back up the throat. But this equally works in the UV case when you're going down the throat. So we have some number of brains moving together in the throat, and this can be thought of in two limits, the large n limit, which in fact gives you back just the normal standard DBI case, subject to those bounds. But it can also be thought of in a small n limit, finite n limit, so say you know, n less than 10. And in that case, you get this non-abelian structure, which changes things quite dramatically in terms of the string theory. I'm sure John might be able to talk about that if needs be. So one thing new in this new paper is that we've written down, instead of having to use Mathematica or write out explicitly each action for each number of brains, for the n equal 3 case, n equal 4 case, we found this nice recursive description that all the cases for the finite n limit actually go back down to the n equals 2 case. So we know what the n equals 2 case is, and everything else, n equals 5, n equals 6, is a function of that n equals 2 case. So it actually works quite nicely. Before, you'd have to do each step by hand, n equals 3, etc. Now we can pretty much tell you immediately what it is. So is this in our scheme? Well, I wouldn't have wasted a few minutes talking about it if it wasn't. And indeed, taking the relativistic limit, so that's the sound speed gets very small, and gamma factor, in this case, gamma dBi factor gets very large. This is what we normally do. And in this case, we do actually find that the action turns into that form that I had previously. In this case, the m index is now minus a half. So we've now actually got a scenario that we were talking about. M is less than a half. M is now actually minus a half. And this will give us new dependence on F and L. So the new bound is now that clump of stuff that we talked about earlier times minus F and L to the power of 1. So we now clearly have this new stronger dependence on F and L. And if F and L, for instance, was extremely large, this would clearly loosen this bound quite a lot and maybe allow in this model where before it wouldn't be. Okay. So what we really want to know is how many brains are there in this picture, in this coincident brain picture. And one way of thinking about it, one way of getting a handle on it, is taking a very, very optimistic, if you've heard any of the talks this week, they're talking about OR of 0.01 being on the borderline of observable. We took an extremely optimistic viewpoint that maybe OR greater than 10 to the minus 4 would possibly be detectable. If you saw a tensor mode with something of that order, even if you saw it higher than that, what I'm saying is if you see anything, any tensor signal, then we can limit the number of brains. This little n now is the number of brains, not anything else. So the number of brains would be limited by the non-Gaussianity that you would see. So again, taking an optimistic view maybe, putting WMAP 5 bound on the FNL of minus 150, and you get that the number of brains that you can have in this picture is either 2 or 3. So this is quite a change from WMAP 3, which, if you know, the FNL bound, this is equilateral FNL now, the FNL bound was of an order of 2 higher. So our results went from having the number of brains being 5 or less to being 3 or less. So it's getting tighter and tighter all the time. In fact, if anyone could show that the equilateral FNL signal was greater than minus 70, so mod less than 70, that would completely rule out getting a detectable tensor signal from these models. So we're all the time trying to figure out ways to distinguish between models, and people talk about the tensor signal as a way of distinguishing between models. What this is saying is that if we don't see FNL, mod FNL greater than or less than 70, if FNL, mod FNL is less than 70, we won't be able to use a tensor signal to differentiate this from any other model. And in fact, if you could get just vanilla plain inflation giving you the same observables as this model. So this isn't taking into account other contributions, say from cosmic strings, other things that can add to your tensor signal. This is just purely from this model. Okay. Also, if somehow your high energy theory tells us that 4 brains or more should be moving in the throat, not 3 or 2, then I'll tell you that you won't be able to see a tensor signal. So again, you're losing the differentiability, the ability to see, to differentiate between your models. Finally, this is for all known compactifications. John can back me up on this. Obviously, if new ones are found, this might change a little bit, but we're not expecting if to change very much. Okay, so what have we seen? We've seen that the bounds that we had in the original DBI picture can be loosened if you have an action of a certain form. And this was all sort of done from the ground up. We didn't look for a theory and then produce these actions. This action comes from an ODE that tells you that you have more dependence on F and L, and that can loosen the bound. We have found one model that does tend to give you this different type of action with a different F and L dependence, and so can loosen the bound on the tensor scalar ratio. So we've gone from a picture where the sort of DBI-like model, the tensor scalar ratio, was incompatible with an observable bound, to a picture where there are at least two scenarios that you can think of, having two or three brains, which at the moment fit in with the observed data. So what future things can we do? Well, you might like trying to find specific working models, i.e. you want to choose your potential. This has all been done potential independent, the same way that the original Baumann-McAllister bound was found potentially independent of the potential. What other theories, what other models give you this class of actions? So we found one in the Thomas and Ward coincident brain picture. Are there any other models? If you think about this action, it's if you could keep going with m less than a half, you get some quite odd things like a cube root on your, in your action, 1/(cube root) or something like that. So are there any high energy theories that give you this sort of thing? And finally, are there any other DBI-like models that are either helped by a similar dependence or in fact have these bounds expressly added in? Things like spinflation, the wrapping of D5 and D7 brains, even things like maybe the monodermy picture that we heard about earlier in the week. Are they affected by this? So that's really it. Thank you very much.
Any questions? Can you provide a way to understand this lower bound you provided in your first few slides? You had a lower bound on R, which
it basically comes from observation. It comes from really the consistency relation. So in this picture, or a 16 CS epsilon, and you can get F, you can get CS in terms of F and L, you can get epsilon in terms of NS. In this, to get this bound, you're neglecting running of F and L. You're saying it's small. Right? At the moment, there's no way we could even think about detecting it. So you're saying it's small. And that gives you, if this is a very nice bound. The original consistency relation gives you something similar for normal inflation models. This gives you, there's an extra term that you've neglected to show in this, but because it's so small. This gives you an observational bound on the tensor scalar ratio just for DBI models.
If there are no other questions, we can thank the speaker again.
Thank you.